It's Thursday, July 9th. I'm Oscar Ramirez in Los Angeles, and this is The Daily Dive. Who is getting all the money? The Small Business Association and the Treasury Department have released the names of more than 660,000 businesses that receive money from the Paycheck Protection Program. The program has given payouts to lawmaker-connected businesses, including car dealerships, casinos, construction companies, and restaurants. Nicholas Wu, politics reporter at USA Today, joins us for more on the PPP. Next, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and President Trump have both said that they are looking at banning TikTok from the U.S. The reasons may differ, however. Pompeo says there are national security concerns, and President Trump might want to ban it to punish China for the coronavirus. Sam Sheed, tech correspondent at CNBC, joins us for more. Finally, there's an ongoing discussion about how COVID-19 spreads through the air. We know that it can spread from respiratory droplets when someone coughs or sneezes, but there's a growing body of evidence showing that it can spread through even smaller aerosolized droplets that can linger in poorly ventilated areas. Kat Eschner, contributing editor at Popular Science, joins us for why COVID's airborne transmission may deserve more attention. It's news without the noise. Let's dive in.
Couldn't be more pleased with the success of the PPP, and you saw that in the unemployment numbers. So not only did we save millions and millions of jobs, but there's no question in my mind the increase in jobs was a direct result of the PPP and reopening the economy. Those are both very important factors.
Joining us now is Nicholas Wu, politics reporter at USA Today. Thanks for joining us, Nicholas.
Thanks so much for having me.
So the Small Business Administration and the Treasury Department have released the names of more than 660 businesses that received between $150,000 or up to the $10 million maximum for the Paycheck Protection Program. In total, they say they dispatched more than $521 billion to nearly 4.9 million businesses since early April. I think they said that healthcare and IT services were among the biggest recipients in all of this. But as we are looking into the businesses that have gotten some of this money, we're starting to find connections to people in Congress. We're starting to find connections to some very wealthy businesses. I think Kanye West, his company was also a recipient of all this. So help us break some of this down, Nicholas. Who's getting all of this money?
This was a massive data dump. There's over 660,000 names, and that's just in the businesses that we got all the names for. And these were the businesses that got over $150,000 in loans. But the great majority of the loans given were actually for under that amount, and all the names were redacted for those. So it's a wide range of businesses here. Everything from, you know, your mom and pop kind of restaurants and stores up to some businesses that were franchises of major corporations to, yes, the yacht clubs and the wineries and the businesses that are connected to members of Congress.
Obviously, this is to help get people through the coronavirus shutdowns. But what did the people have to do to apply and successfully get a loan?
So it was kind of a tricky process. So the idea was to provide forgivable loans to small businesses in order to keep all of their employees on through the coronavirus pandemic. And the criteria was that you needed to have 500 or fewer workers, and you could get a low interest loan of up to $10 million. And originally, as it was written, a lot of franchises of major corporations were eligible because the total number of employees you had was counted by the individual business unit, not as part of the overall, you know, large corporation that is something like McDonald's. So that caused a lot of controversy, but was changed once the program was renewed.
And so tell us some of the big names that were getting some money in this. As mentioned at the beginning, there was a lot of lawmaker-connected businesses that received some of this money.
What we noticed as we're going through the data is that some of these businesses are connected to some of the wealthiest members of Congress. And a lot of these members do own small businesses on the side, too. So, for instance, we noticed everyone from Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania, whose car dealerships received at least three different loans between $350,000 each and $1 million. Another congressman, Kevin Hearn from Oklahoma, whose company that's held in a family trust received loans for their McDonald's franchises. and Congressman Matt Cartwright in Pennsylvania. His wife is a partner at a law firm, and they received a loan somewhere between $350,000 and $1 million. The Treasury Department gave us dollar amounts in terms of ranges, not in terms of specific amounts.
There's not anybody that's been accused of any wrongdoing in any of this. This is just kind of throwing out the names of basically people who've gotten some of these loans.
There are the names of the businesses, not of the specific people. So it was kind of tricky to actually trace all of them back to who actually owned all of these.
What's been the overall reception of this program? Because I know that there's been a few problems early on in the beginning. There's a lot of businesses that complained that they didn't get anything, any money out of this, but it does seem to have helped a vast variety of businesses get through some of these shutdowns, or at least try to get through some of the shutdowns.
It's something that we saw, especially with these businesses owned or linked to lawmakers, was that they emphasized that they were able to keep on staff for the duration of the pandemic. So this was a very popular program, and it was so popular, in fact, that it ran out of money at first because so many people needed the funding. Where the controversy comes in is what order people might have gotten funds in, whether there was any special preference because of connections people had, or in the case of some companies like those controlled by the governor of West Virginia, the governor there is a billionaire, and he also owns a very large resort complex in the state, which received, between $5 to $10 million worth of loans. So that's where we're seeing some of the backlash to the PPP program. And it'll be interesting to see what Congress does with it the next time it comes up for renewal.
It's been extended through August 8th. I guess they're still got a few billion to go through or to allocate. When is this going to come up again?
Well, Congress is on recess right now, but they'll come back at the end of July and have given themselves a very short window to try to draft and allocate money for a potential next coronavirus stimulus bill. So we'll see exactly what happens there. But as the coronavirus pandemic continues and as businesses across the country remain shuttered, it looks like this could still very much be a major issue.
Nicholas Wu, politics reporter at USA Today. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
What you'll see the administration do is take actions that preserve and protect that information and deny the Chinese Communist Party access to the private information that belongs to America.
Joining us now is Sam Sheed, tech correspondent at CNBC. Thanks for joining us, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
TikTok users across the U.S. were pretty concerned after a few things we heard out of the Trump administration. First Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Fox News that he's looking at banning TikTok. And then President Trump the following day said that he was basically the same thing, that he was also looking at banning TikTok from being used here in the United States. And quickly, I know a bunch of users took to the platform to express their displeasure about it. But coming from the administration, they're saying it's a national security concern. Sam, tell us a little bit more about it.
So this is kind of the latest incident of the U.S. raising alarm bells about a Chinese company. So obviously, Huawei has been in the spotlight quite a lot. The U.S. says that Huawei could pose a national security threat. They're worried that the company will pass data to Beijing. So that's where it all kind of comes from. Huawei have been under pressure. ZTE have been under pressure in the past before as well. And TikTok is just the latest company to kind of face pressure from the Trump administration.
Now, the company that owns TikTok is called ByteDance, and it's headquartered in Beijing. But TikTok was quick to point out that now they have an American CEO. They have huge offices in Los Angeles. I think their European hub is in London. So they're quick to try to distance themselves from Beijing and also saying things like they wouldn't provide them with any personal information from users, even if they asked.
They've been on this push to set up offices around the world, and they are very keen to distance themselves from ByteDance. So as you pointed out, they've hired Kevin Mayer, who was head of streaming at Disney before, and he's the new CEO of TikTok based in Los Angeles, where they've got hundreds of people working, and they've also got hundreds of staff in London as well. So they want the world to know that TikTok user data is not stored or passed to Beijing. That's what they tell people. They deny any allegations that that's what they're doing. So yeah, they are definitely trying to appear as an international company as opposed to a Chinese company.
TikTok's only been around since about 2017 and they've grown pretty huge. I think they have over 2 billion subscribers and whatnot. And I remember early on there was concerns about privacy and things like that. But has there been any indication that they have handed over any user information to Beijing? Has there been any of that stuff?
As far as I'm aware, there is no evidence to suggest that they've done that. I'm sure that US policymakers and politicians are desperately trying to find some, but as of yet, I don't think there's any evidence to support the allegations that they're making.
Now, we have to also mention, you know, there was this thing with the president and his rally that he was going to have in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was news that there was a bunch of TikTok users that got together and said, hey, let's sign up for tickets and then not show up. It just begs the question, you know, maybe is the administration angry that TikTok users banded together on this front?
Quite possibly. I mean, I've seen people saying that if President Trump wants to lose young voters, then the thing to do is to take TikTok away from them. Young people love this app. And if the US president was to ban it now, I think there would be a major backlash. It's really become very popular. People are kind of using it now more than they're using Facebook and Instagram in some cases. So yeah, I can understand why people would be angry.
But there's a lot of political powers at play when it comes to TikTok. TikTok just said that they're pulling out of the Hong Kong market. China imposed a new security law in the city that gives police more powers. What was going on with that story?
So TikTok was worried that it would be forced to give user data to Beijing if it remained in Hong Kong. Now that the police have these sweeping powers to request data from technology companies on Hong Kong users, TikTok decided that it would kind of just backtrack and pull out of Hong Kong altogether. And as a result, it won't have to comply with any data access requests from Beijing. TikTok doesn't have that many users in Hong Kong, so it's not a huge deal in some ways. I think it's got about 150,000 users in Hong Kong. So some people are saying it was a bit of a PR move to appear as though they weren't close to Beijing. So that's kind of the story there.
Well, I mean, it'll be an interesting development if TikTok does get banned in the United States. For now, it just seems like, even coming from Mike Pompeo and the president himself, they're looking at it. You know, they're not confirming anything. As you mentioned, it'd be pretty hard to envision that actually happening. I mean, you're going to lose a lot of young supporters who are making money on the platform and just enjoy being there. It would be a pretty tough sell at that point, but we'll have to continue monitoring to see what happens on this story.
I would be shocked if they did ban the app in the US, but they banned it in India last week. So it is possible for big countries to ban TikTok.
Sam Sheed, tech correspondent at CNBC. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
But we're also looking at the possible role of airborne transmission in other settings where you have particularly closed settings where you have poor ventilation. So we will be issuing our brief in the coming days, and that will outline everything that we have in this area.
Joining us now is Kat Eschner, contributing editor at Popular Science. Thanks for joining us, Kat.
Thanks for having me.
As we learn more about the coronavirus and how it is transmitted from person to person, we've kind of already established that in-person gatherings, being in the same room with a lot of people, tends to be the way it gets transmitted more easily. Early on, they said, you know, you got to be careful for the surfaces and wash your hands. And while that is something we should still be doing, it tends not to transmit as easily that way. And the big discussion right now is whether the transmission of COVID-19 is transmitted through aerosolized droplets or these bigger droplets that come out when you're coughing or sneezing. And there was 239 experts that were pushing the WHO, the World Health Organization, to look into this a little bit more. Kat, tell us a little bit about this.
So first of all, just to explain the difference between the two kinds of droplets, because I think there's some confusion about that. So where we get that magical 6 feet number, you know, how you're told to stay 6 feet away from people who you're not in a bubble with, is because of those large droplets. So when you cough, when you sneeze, when you sing, when you talk loudly, some of these things can produce these large droplets containing lots of the virus that can travel up to 6 feet, but they're relatively heavy, and so they fall to the ground about there. But there's a growing body of really compelling evidence to suggest that people are getting COVID-19 from other people who might be a room away. And the scientists who study this say that's because the tiny droplets, these tiny aerosolized droplets, can actually carry enough of the virus to make someone sick. Now, it's a bit more complicated than that, because what's actually happening is there are a lot of people in a room or in an environment, and the amount of the virus sort of builds over time in that environment until people are inhaling enough small droplets that they might be getting the virus. But that's the sort of root of the difference between those two things.
I mean, that's all kind of informing our understanding of how this is transmitted. And really, this becomes a story about wearing masks, about having less people indoors, and about having good ventilation in places. That's why, you know, a lot of people keep pointing to bars and restaurants and churches as well, where there's a lot of singing, a lot of chanting, different things like that. If it is true that the coronavirus lives in these tinier aerosols and they can build up in a room, well, that's how people are going to be getting it a lot easier. So one of the things, this letter that was sent to the WHO, a lot of experts are saying you guys need to look into this more or issue guidelines that reflect this. Why has the WHO had a hard time in confirming this or just saying something about it?
So that's a really interesting question, because you would think that the World Health Organization, this big organization, would be on this sort of emerging data very quickly. Now, my colleague Apoorva Mandavilli of the New York Times is doing great work on the World Health Organization angle and sort of the politics of why they're having trouble putting this together and being so slow to respond. She broke that story last week, so I would refer you to her work. But I wanted to take it a step further and look at the science angle, because that's what we do here at Popular Science. And I think the most notable thing is that there is just like a really convincing body of evidence that this kind of transmission is happening, and that simple steps like the ones you mentioned, so like mask wearing and other interventions like thinking about indoor air circulation, can really help.
Going back to the WHO and the piece from the New York Times that you were mentioning, there was a couple of meetings that they've gotten together with already to kind of discuss this. But they said that some of those meetings were kind of overtaken by people who were more supporters of washing hands and emphasizing the cleaning of surfaces. So they haven't really gone to this jump, but there actually has been an update where the WHO said that they are getting some expert committees together to go over the evidence of transmission of the virus, and they plan to release some updated recommendations in a few days. So I'm wondering if they will make an overall recommendation for mask wearing or something like that. But it seems to be that the WHO kind of got the hint and that they're actually going to start exploring this a little bit more.
Well, I think some important context on the WHO as an organization is that when they issue a guideline, for instance, they have to think about global context. They have to think about all the different places in the world and how that guideline might be reinterpreted, reused. And they have to think about their own organizational priorities. And one of the things about hand washing, which you mentioned, is that hand washing is a really effective catch-all measure for disease prevention. So hand washing doesn't just prevent COVID-19, given the methods of transmission of COVID-19, hand washing is not a bad idea. Hand washing is a good idea. But beyond that, it also prevents diarrheal diseases. It prevents food poisons. Like, it's just a really good catch-all. So I'm not surprised to see the World Health Organization still focusing on hand washing as a measure. But with COVID-19, there is like a really substantial body of evidence now that other interventions are more needed, and that those interventions are frankly a bit more complicated. Just looking at this from their perspective, they might think those interventions such as masks or such as providing incentives for businesses to really look at their HVAC systems or buy an external HEPA filter, like those kinds of things are things that will not be easy to do everywhere. So I think that really informs the way they're making their recommendations. I do think that it's really important that they provide up-to-date scientific recommendations, because that's their job, and I would like to see them right on these tiny droplet findings. But, you know, if they haven't done it yet, that is some of the possible reasons why.
Kat Eschner, contributing editor at Popular Science. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That's it for today. Join us on social media at Daily Dive Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. Leave us a comment, give us a rating, and tell us the stories that you're interested in. Follow us on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This episode of The Daily Dive is produced by Victor Wright and engineered by Tony Sorrentino. I'm Oscar Ramirez, and this was your Daily Dive.